Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And that was the HR panel. So we looked at, you know, how do you deal with HR? So many people say they send their CV out, except we even had one person on the show and I said he sent out 400 CVs and he only got 5 responses. What is the deal with that and how should we approach HR? Should you send your CV into the black box? Should you go directly to the line manager? If you want the answer and you didn't get it, go to our website and you can visit the podcast on dubaii1038.com/eyeoncareers and listen to that segment on the HR panel and get all the answers there. They also covered what do they look for when they are hiring. The number one thing that really came out was the ability to learn, or what I call intellectual curiosity. They say, get someone with the right attitude and we can train them. That was universal across all the HR managers from telecoms, banking, to customer services at Tanfif is the call center for Emirates NBD, as well as I think just Emirates NBD. I'm not sure if they have other customers as well, but you can check that. But again, ability to learn, number one, leadership, number two, problem solving ability, number three, but attitude overall is one of the big things that they look at. And I guess their advice was, you know, if you really want to move your career forward, Abdulaziz said, be positively dissatisfied. So that means, you know, you're dissatisfied, but you're positive about it. You're going to change things. Build your personal brand up. Make sure that you have a nice digital footprint, because employers are going to check that. Go for some professional networking. Take time. Go to conferences. Read about your profession. Get to know the players. Get to become one of them. I like to say, you know, you need to know the players before you become one out there. And a lot of people don't even know who the players are. But that's enough about that. If you want to find and get some great tips on your career, again, go to our website, dubaii1038.com. Listen to the podcast. Actually, on the Eye on Career section, I think we've had over 280 CEOs, heads of HR, you know, people just talking about how you can be more successful in your career. Go there. There's some great things on there. And we also had Nagin Fataya Dasmal, who's the founder of NBAR 1847 and Jet Set. She runs 3 companies for 16 years and is battling stage 4 breast cancer. You know, if you think you're having a tough time at the office, here's a lady who's really battled a life-threatening disease. And when you meet with her, you can't tell. I mean, she looks fantastic and she's doing a great job. She's got more energy than I think she's a superwoman. But listen to her story and find out how she gets that extra strength, and you won't have much of a leg to stand on if you're whining. But enough about that. Let's talk about what's happening right now. And right now we have one of the biggest property CEOs in the region with us, one of the biggest developers, Indigo Properties. We have the Chief Executive Officer, Dev Maitra. Dev, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Sean.
And it's great to have you here. It's Shane, by the way, but that's no problem at all. A lot of people call me Sean. Sean, Shane, Shane, Sean, same things. Could be Sean, John, whatever. You know, you're quite a young, I don't know if it's just that you have a baby face or you're just a young CEO, because are you vegetarian or what's the, you look like you're in fantastic shape here.
It's just a put on, and I'm not all that young. I'm 47.
Wow, you're 47? You look like you're 32 or something.
It's a lifestyle that I led, very disciplinary lifestyle, regimental.
No dessert, huh? No sugar in the tea.
Big weakness. but I make up by doing a lot of exercise.
Really, huh? Yeah. What do you do? You wake up in the morning, and a lot of the CEOs wake up at like 5 in the morning, work out, and, you know, is that what you do?
Exactly. At 5:30, I wake up. I drive down 25 kilometers to play badminton for 1.5 hours and come back all the way from there to work. And I can't miss that. This is a habit, passion, and keeps me going.
Right, right. Yeah, so getting up early, you know, I had Reno Sabatino, the chief executive officer of the Ras Al Khaimah Investment Authority. And he says, you know, simple things, you know, get your feet on the ground early before the sun comes up. Get your feet on the ground. Don't be horizontal when that sun comes up. And I find that trend, discipline, getting out of the gates nice and early, simple things that people just drop.
Absolutely. The time that I get up early and I drive to play is the time that I rewind and I think my strategies for the day. I plan my day during that drive. That 1 hour that I spend with myself playing and exercising in the morning is my hour. This is the only hour I can call mine. Rest is work. And work.
You're gone. And the other thing you're touching on is time management, right? You find that the most successful people, they actually take, you know, you're saying there you spend an hour planning your day, making sure. I'm sure in the afternoon you at least have another 15 or 20 minutes where you're scheduling what's happening. And then you also, when I look at low performers, there's no time management whatsoever. They're just constantly reacting to what's happening in front of them.
Absolutely. You have to plan your day well in advance, and midday sometimes you have to rewind and think what you have achieved and where you are lagging behind and then catch up on that. You cannot start a day without planning at all, no.
I have one guy says to me, you know, Shane, you know, you're an executive search consultant, you're in real estate, and Alyssa is here, she's in PR, but they say, you know, you don't have different jobs, we all have the same job, we're all traders, you trade your time for money, your asset is your time, you're not managing it, you're not measuring it, you're not taking control of your greatest asset.
Absolutely. You have to control the time rather than time controlling you.
That's the number thing. But a lot of us feel controlled by the market, this invisible hand that thrashes us around up and down. And as we sit here in Dubai, we're all kind of on the edge of our seats, watching what's happening with the currencies. The euro seems to be dropping now. We have the gas price that's, you know, which way is it meandering? Hopefully it's meandering up, but a lot of the economists are saying it's down and it's not going to come up for a while. And then our rent prices, are they coming up? Are they coming down? Should we buy? Should we sell? Should we rent? What is going on in the real estate market?
The real estate market, after a very long time, have achieved some sense of stability. The world over, the yield is around 2-3%. In Dubai, we have still seen yields of about 5-8%, which is fantastic. The rental yields have not come down, so it's not a crisis. It's the sense of, I do feel a sense of stability creeping into the market. There is a bit of oversupply, which will correct itself in a year's time from now. But Dubai,
it's going to be a year before the rent prices come down. Is that what you just said?
Rents.
You're depressing people.
Rents will be stabilized. I don't think there will be a massive correction or so, because the influx of population is always more than the supply. I mean, there are certain numbers which people should be aware of. Dubai has capacity to deliver only about 15,000 units per year.
That sounds so low.
That's correct. So the whole score of oversupply is...
I thought they make more hotel rooms than that at an hour in Dubai.
There are lots of launches, Shane. There are lots of launches, but in real terms, the delivery of units will be only 12,000 to 15,000. They can't deliver more than that in a year.
Okay, this is villas, or this is villas and apartments, or
all villas, commercial and apartments, all put together. It can't deliver. Dubai doesn't have the capability to deliver.
Villa, residential, including apartments, villas, as well as commercial.
Absolutely.
Wow, only 15,000. But that's not including hotel room. Hotel rooms separate.
The hotels are separate, yeah.
Separate. Because I heard they were putting 60,000 on or something this year. Is that true? Or
all these are launches. You know, it takes take the lifespan of any development is not less than 3 years. So whatever launches that you see happening now is going to be delivered in 3 years. So some of that all put together, divided by the number of months it takes, it's still comes to the same figure of 12,000 to 15,000.
Wow, okay. So we're safe then. So we're in a very sustainable market. We're going to see strong, you know, reasonable growth. And so basically, if you are going to buy to live in it, it's fine.
Absolutely. It's a very, very good time to buy to live in. The rents will be, that is currently paid by the tenants, will be more or less equal to the mortgage that one pays. And there are some fantastic launches which has happened in the affordable market segment, in the mid-market segment, and there are, it's a very good time to buy.
What's the best buy for the affordable segment for those at the bottom of the food chain?
Recently, there is a launch by which is I'm trying to recollect the name. It's created waves. It's a property launch.
Nasiba.
It's called Nasiba, and they've launched townhouses for a million or so. Glitz was a success. Indigo Zen is a success story. So yeah, there are plenty of launches which have been successful.
So you think Nasiba is the good buy right now? Most bang
value
for your
money.
Buck.
Value for money, yes.
And then mid-tier?
Mid-tier, I would say mid-tier and mid-high tier. Indigo Zen is a fantastic buy. Besides that, we have few launches by Dubai Properties, and in Maidan District, there are some very good launches.
Right. So you're saying it's a pretty healthy market, nothing to be concerned about. And we're not concerned about the oil price, or are we?
Not at all.
This is very confident.
Absolutely. One has to take a step back and see it from a global perspective and a higher perspective. The market will always go up and down, and nobody knows when and how to time the market. But for a smart investor, when the markets are down, you should buy. And this is a good time to buy. Well, the oil prices are down. Yes, they are down. But the production price of oil is also very low here. And over the years, the governments have created big sovereign wealth funds have created great reserves. So we are in a very sustainable market here.
So you think basically, there might be a bit of a dip, but nothing to worry about. It's just another day in the office, and we're just going to march right through this.
Yes, we will march right through this going forward in 2020. Yes, there is a blip. Yes, one cannot deny and close eyes that there is a blip. But I don't think there is something to be overly worried about. It will correct itself in the next 6 months to 1 year's time.
Excellent. And in the meantime, we won't have to worry about the price at the pump.
No.
So, not that anyone cares about that in this region anyway, but okay. So, you're launching some new, are you launching any new product, any new things now, or?
We have launched the project called Indigo Zen, which is one of the brightest projects that Dubai has will see. It's a tropical paradise in a prime location.
Sounds nice. Tropical paradise.
It is indeed. It's going to see greenery that Dubai has not seen. Some beautiful tropical green plantation and
mango trees.
Various. We are importing plants from very tropical places. And okay. It will have ponds, rivers, flowing water, gardens, yoga platforms, jogging tracks.
Will you be able to swim in the water? Because the thing is here, they have all these lakes and stuff, but you can't go in them.
No,
wouldn't
you
it
can't.
Be cool if you could like swim in them? Or
yeah,
no?
It is, but you can't really swim in them. It's not very. It's not healthy.
No. Okay. Coming up, we are going to hear how Dev got to the top of his game. What are some of the tips and tricks of getting into the C-suite? So stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And for those of you just joining us, we started the show with an HR panel. We had some of the top HR professionals from around the region talking about how to go about getting a job, how to go about getting a promotion, how to go about getting a raise, what they look for when they're hiring and everything else. If you missed that, you can go check it out on our website, dubaieye1038.com/iOnCareers, and check out the podcast. As well, I want to thank the ICAEW, the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, for giving us the opportunity to sponsor the show and allow us to bring you so many great success stories. It's an organization that's really committed to your professional development, and you may want to look into getting an ICAEW Chartered Accountancy qualification. It is definitely going to be a career catalyst. as I think I had the CFO of Do once on the show, and he said, I've never seen a poor accountant. So, hey, wait a second. I think we also have an accountant on the show right now, Dev Mitra, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties. Welcome back, Dev.
Thank you.
You're a chartered accountant from India, correct?
That's correct.
So you would probably agree that you haven't seen a poor accountant.
I have to admit, books do not lie.
Books do not lie. But did you start life saying, "Hey, I want to, you know, I'm going to become a chartered accountant, and then we become a CEO"? Or, you know, in high school, did you want to be maybe a famous cricketer, as many do?
I wanted to become a pilot, a fighter pilot, to begin with. But somewhere down the line, the vision got a bit distorted, and the best thing I can do was to lead business and fly high with business and in life.
Yeah. Fly high in the boardroom. What happened to the fighter pilot, though? Did you get like motion sickness, and it just wasn't like working for you?
My parents didn't allow me because it was too life-threatening, according to them. So
Okay. Yeah, but if you're in the armed forces, the pilot, that's one of the best, right? I think you have the lowest casualties, I think.
It's a rush that one has, the feeling high, yeah, and you're serving the nation, so it was a dual purpose.
Right, but the salary's just not there. You know, you're not going to be buying an Indigo. What's it, Indigo?
Zen.
You won't be buying a property there.
The service that you...
If you're in the Indian Air Force, it's not happening for you.
No.
But it would be. So the CEO position is a bit more lucrative.
Yes, it's lucrative in many ways. Besides commercially, it's a very fulfilling and enriching experience.
Yeah. So at what point did that vision take place? Or is it something that just grew organically over time that you serendipitously ended up in the seat? Or was it something where you're like, in 10 years from now, I'm going to be CEO, or I'm throwing myself up Burj Khalifa?
But the vision was always there to reach the top, and it's the hard work, the perseverance. Once I had the vision, the perseverance and the desire and the nonstop hunger, that took me there. I always wanted to lead, be in the leadership position, but without perseverance and nonstop failure and yet not giving up, I couldn't have achieved this.
Some people say one of the things that separates us from the animals is imagination. You know, our ability to imagine 15 years into the future, or 5 years, or 10 years into the future, that this is one of the critical tools in our toolkit to become successful, that you need to imagine yourself, who the person you are going to be 5 years or 10 years out. Some of my guests go as far as creating vision boards. And so the first thing they come up, they see the house they want, the car they want, the partner they want, the life they want. I had other guys who write it on in erasable marker on their morning mirror. So it's the first thing they see. You know, how important is vision? And if it is important, do you use any techniques or whatever to enhance and make it more effective piece of your toolkit?
Absolutely. I dream every, before I go to sleep, Shane, I have a vision that what I want to achieve, my higher, bigger, greater goals. And I dream every night. I try to dream that every night. And the difference that I do is in the morning I start chasing those dreams. I never give up on my dreams. I try and achieve them every morning. So it's not a dream which is a long-term, you know, which is there for, you know, kept in a storage. I chase them every day. And that's what I meant, like persevering, hard work.
So you're actually starting your day with a focus on your vision, and you're ending your day with a focus on your vision.
Undoubtedly.
And when you look at top performers, I mean, even and underperformers, even in your own organization, this is really focus. You're taking time to focus yourself. Do you feel that this is one of the differentiators between the top and the bottom?
Undoubtedly. Without a vision, without where you know where to go, you can never reach there. So without a vision if you don't have an aim, you will not be able to chase, and you won't know how to get there.
They did a study. They said people who write their goals down are 40% more likely to achieve them. Just the fact that you wrote it down. Just the fact. And most people don't write it down.
Funny enough, every 31st of every year, I do a self-assessment, which is when I write down my successes, my failures.
On the 31st?
On the 31st.
So everybody else is like celebrating New Year, and you're like, I need to be alone. I'm self-assessing right now.
No, I do it before the celebration.
Okay.
31st evening, I write down all my successes and failures, and I keep doing that. And I ask the close ones, my close family members, and I do go ask some people who know me closely, and ask them about my strengths and weaknesses for the year, and what have I been, where have I failed, and where have I achieved. And I learn a lot from them.
You ask people around you.
I do.
What's been your biggest failure?
My biggest failure. Oh, there are plenty of them.
You can't say they're laughing. It doesn't sound like a failure when you're laughing hysterically about it. You can't be this comfortable with failure. I mean, come on. But that the people, you know, the cliche is failure is the stepping stone to
it
success. And you feel that.
It is absolutely true. I have moved from one failure to the other without losing enthusiasm. And I think that's what made the difference for me. I've never, ever given up, never, ever given in or lost enthusiasm after a failure.
Lots of times people say every success has a seed. Every success has a starting point. Often that starting point is a failure, is one of your darkest, most uncomfortable moments. God is here and then planting the seed of your next success.
When I gave my first CA exam, my first group, prior to that, my giving that exam, I was a bright student even at the cost of being a little immodest. I was a pretty bright student. But my first CA attempt, I failed so miserably. It was an eye-opener. I just laughed at it. And I worked very, very hard because I failed miserably.
So even whether you wanted the chartered accountancy or not, you're like, I need to just close this chapter off and go back and finish this test off.
I didn't give up. I just learned that lesson that it would not be just my intelligence that would do the trick. I have to work very, very hard to achieve that. And that's been a lesson for me all through my life, Shane. I never achieved anything just by the stroke of luck. Yes, there was a question of timing. I was, a lot of hard work and perseverance. You have to be in the right place at the right time. There is a bit of timing issue here. But undoubtedly you have to.
Because a lot of people think, when they see people who are CEOs or who are fairly wealthy, that they came from a rich family. Did you come from a rich family?
No, no.
Did daddy hold your hand through everything?
I have seen some good times and not so good times. So yes, there was a part of my life where I was a completely pampered child. I was given everything on a silver platter. But there was a time in my early youth.
So your dad was wealthy?
He was well-to-do. And okay. And then it all went away. There was a time in my career, early youth, when everything went away. And I supported my family.
Your dad went bankrupt?
My dad went bankrupt, yes.
Oh my God, what happened? What did he do? What was his business?
He was working, actually. He quit the job. He was in a very, very high senior executive position. And after he quit the job, the whole responsibility of the management of the family and the finances fell on me. And I was an apprentice.
How old were you?
I was 23.
Ouch, that's an early age to be responsible.
Yes. But that was one time. It was a defining moment of my life, Shane. And I changed from a young man to a young fighting man.
To a young depressed man.
No, fighting man.
You weren't depressed at all.
No, I wouldn't.
So you were like, bring it on. This is it. Now I'm really going to make it.
Yes.
And you went...
Yes.
After it.
Yes. That was one defining moment which changed the course of my life. And I realized that I can't party anymore. The money that I'm earning for my, which was sort of my, for my pleasures and, as early youth.
Ice cream and movies, of course.
Ice cream and movies and some other things. Yes. And I decided that I have to support the family. And it changed the course of my life, Shane. I worked for 18 hours a day. For a good few years, and one of the lucky break which came my way, and which defines my early part of my success was my getting a very big break as the youngest finance and admin country manager for British Airways. This is how I started my big managerial career.
In the airline business.
In the airline business.
And how do you make the switch over to property then?
When property happened, I think by destiny, more than my desire. Once the area office of British Airways moved from Bahrain to Dubai, the role sort of diminished because I was no longer a part of the strategic team and the planning team. So I moved on from there and I joined one of the biggest organizations in Bahrain, and which was also involved into the properties. And that was my first step 20 years back into the properties of GCC, and I realized there is a lot of potential, there is a lot of creativity in the property industry in this part of the world, and I just fell in love with it.
And off you went into the property business, which is probably the most exciting region to be in property. Just drive down Sheikh Zayed Road, and we have a eclectic mix of buildings and one of the more exciting skylines, I think, in the world.
Absolutely, Dubai is defining the whole world. I mean, in this little place, if you consider the size, of the city, it's nowhere in comparison to the New Yorks and the Londons or the Bombays or
by population.
But what beautiful, significantly. Magnanimous. I just can't stop using those terms for the buildings and the architecture of Dubai.
Our tower's bigger than theirs. We're the biggest tower.
Oh,
the
yes.
Highest.
Yeah, higher, bigger, longer.
It's much bigger, it's better. I know, but it's inspiring too, because you know, after a long day, and you know, you have those days where things just aren't going your way, and then you'd look up at the Burj Khalifa, and you're like, man, if Sheikh Mohammed can make that, I'm going to make it too. You know, it just charges me up when I see the stuff that this guy, his biggest mall, the biggest man-made island, the biggest airport, the biggest tower. He's just the biggest, you know.
Yeah, he's a mammoth. It's mammoth visionary. I mean, there is nobody, it's incomparable. The kind of vision and the strategy that he has is something to learn every day from his thing.
It's an inspiring city. This is one city where you can take your career to the top. And if you're out there and you have a question about how to get there, SMS is at 4001. That's 4001. Any question you have about getting to the top of your game, it's now. Send it in. And you have one of the region's top CEOs, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties, will personally address your question. We just had a guy on the show who hasn't been able to find a job for 2 years. I bet he's going to have a job within 90 days. And we're sitting, we'll have coffee with him. We're going to turn his life around. And you could be next. So SMS us at 4001. Coming up, we're going to hear what Dev's biggest challenge of his entire life was in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what it takes to get to the top, to the corner office, to the Chief Executive Officer suite. And with us is a man who's done just that. It's Dev Mitra, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties. Dev, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And I think, you know, one of the things you were talking about was it wasn't until, you know, you had some mishaps that you really started to get serious about your career. You failed your chartered accountancy the first time you took the exam. You didn't take it that seriously, came back with a vengeance. And then your father had quit his job and you became the sole breadwinner of the house at the tender age of 23. And again, you know, it really drove home the importance of making a dollar or a rupee at that time. And you took your career to the next level up into, you took to the skies with British Airways. Maybe that was a Freudian expression of your boyhood dream of becoming a fighter pilot. So somehow you had to get involved with aviation early on. And then through the family offices, you made your way into the real estate business. And that's where you found your passion. But through everything that you've done, Dev, what's really been the biggest challenge? What has really been your darkest moment or one of those moments where you really had to dig down deep to find your way through?
At the deepest crisis of the recession, when the recession hit, I found myself completely unprepared. And I realized that the assets that I was holding had completely gone down the drain. There was zero liquidity. And I was facing a situation that suddenly years of my hard work had gone to nothing. And this is where I think this was
Because your assets were just dropping by 60-70%.
It didn't exist. No, it just never... I mean, I realized it never existed. Some of the assets that I had bought had never existed.
This was like, so you bought, sand lots that they hadn't created.
Absolutely.
So it just went up in smoke.
It just went up
So it went totally zero.
Absolutely zero.
Oh, my God. And did you want to die?
No, I wanted to fight.
You wanted to take... you wanted to kill the other guy who sold you the property.
yeah. There was a feeling like
that. I didn't want to die, I wanted to kill. In fact, I still do. Okay, I understand. Yeah, you're a fighter. Okay, that's good. So that's what you got to pull through, I guess.
Yeah, I had to dig really, really deep. And I realized that it's going to be a long-run battle. It's not going to be an affair of 6 months or 1 year. So I needed patience, perseverance, to survive and to sustain that pain with a straight face, and yet managing my finances, my routine, and to come up to the top back again.
But that's what people thought of the crisis, right? They thought it was going to be 6 months. I look back, where I got the idea from. They're like, Lehman's has collapsed, Bear Stearns has collapsed, like in 6 months we'll be out of this. Like, where do you get that idea? But you believed it, and somehow that got you through it, right? Because nobody thought it was going to last as long as it did, and you just keep plugging, saying, okay, around next couple quarters we're going to see some daylight, and it just started, it just got darker and darker and darker.
It took a long time, Shane, for people to even understand the magnitude of the crisis, and I think most of the people reacted once they have registered. It was sheer disbelief to begin with, that it can't happen. And then...
Oh, yeah, we were immune. We were immune. There was that phase where, Middle East, especially in Saudi, I think the Saudi economic actually said that on CNN, that we're insulated. That was the term, right? We're insulated.
Yes, and the people living in this part of the world, we also believed that we were very insulated. And once it registered, I think the reaction time was a bit late. Otherwise, we could have solved it a little earlier than what had. But once it sunk in, it took a lot to come back and take the right decision and carry on with the hard work, because a lot of people just fell apart. They just fell away during the times of crisis. They just gave up. And you must have heard about lots of stories, people parking their cars in the airport and just disappearing. This lot of people lost a lot of money, a lot of lives, a lot of hopes and aspirations were lost. But I just carried on. I had a vision. I had a path. I had to re-strategize. I had to find inspiration from within and motivate myself. And here I am today.
I think a lot of people over-leveraged, right? And I had some candidates, they had 80,000 dirhams a month in mortgage. I'm not saying they bought three houses and massive houses. What are you thinking? Why would you do that? And, so when the asset values dropped, you're totally up the creek in a major way. What's your approach to leverage? I mean, when you look at growth, I mean, also from an organizational perspective, some people say, if you're not leveraged, you're not geared right for growth. You're not growing fast enough. You're not doing everything you should as a CEO to drive that growth. Other people, some of the old school businessmen say, debt is the devil. I was talking to Mahindra Patel, who's the founder of Jeep. There, and he said, I have 200 cars in my fleet and I don't have a single lease. I don't own a single dollar on anything. And he said, his vision is, grow organically, grow with the market, don't be greedy, be patient. But some other guys are the opposite. What's your take on how should we use leverage?
It's a mix of both, Shane. It's a real mix of both. There should be gearing, yes, because gearing accelerates your growth process, but gearing beyond certain limit is something which is unsustainable. You should only gear up to the level of what your balance sheet can support up to 3 to 5 years. Beyond that, one shouldn't gear up.
Right. Within 3 to 5 years, you say, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then should you sell equity for the rest?
You should definitely. You have to inject equity, because if your skin is in the game, then only you will work that much hard.
Right. So you got to put some skin in the game. So you're saying a mix, equity, debt, together, but be careful with the leverage.
Very much. It has to be in the right proportion, because if you over leverage and things start to deteriorate, then you're caught.
Do you have any other philosophies or business strategies that you use as North Stars to kind of keep you through? So here's one kind of rule of thumb: don't take more leverage that you can't wipe off the balance sheet in 3 to 5 years, given your cash flows. Do you have any other?
I'm sort of more on the conservative and prudent line of doing business. My growth trajectory is, even though it's pretty high, I set very, very high targets, but I want to grow on a very solid footing. So I don't think I would ever be keeping some unrealistic targets to grow and put pressure on the team and put pressure on myself and the organization to achieve those unrealistic targets. I'm happy with a sustainable growth proposition.
Right. So you don't believe in this kind of breakthrough goal thing. Have you ever heard of that? Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup for Your Soul. He said, that you should set he said to me, Shane, write down your goal for the year. So I said, okay, I wrote my goal. And he said, you know what the problem is? I said, what? He said, you were thinking about reality when you wrote that. He's like, you need to have unrealistic. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, my goal was to sell 1 million books in a day. It's unrealistic. No, only one author did it, and that was the author of Harry Potter. On her third or fourth book, Harry Potter book, it sold 1 million a day. So he's like, I'm unknown, didn't make any sense. And he's like, but I wrote it down. 3 months later, he achieved it. So what's reality?
It's well, one can have an unrealistic dream. Some people do achieve them too, but I'm more on the prudent lines. I would tread more on cautious lines.
10 to 15% growth, something like that. Or you said 7.
That's
eight.
On 7 to 8% of the yield in the real estate market.
Right.
If I get anything in a business double digit growth, I'm more than happy. I think that's wonderful.
Wonderful growth. Interesting. Okay, so be realistic. Keep your go slow and steady. Slow and steady wins the race.
Absolutely.
And so what about in terms of career progression? Because one of the questions we were talking about was how long should you stay in a role? How long should you stay in a company? When you look at some of the highest paid CEOs in the world, they're 30 plus years experience in their industry. Larry Ellison, I think, was the highest paid in 2012 or 2013. And he's, started IT from the time he was 13 years old. What's your take on slow and steady when it comes to career progression and how long in a role, how long in a company?
How long in a company, the answer to that lies in how satisfied you are within one company. If you're relatively satisfied, because once you have reached certain level in your career, like in a CEO or in a director position, it's a Maslow's hierarchical curve that kicks in after that, because you have financial needs already taken care of. Then your ego needs, your other needs take over more than your financial factor. And if you're satisfied in one place, I don't think I'm a professor of moving places. I'd rather be in one place and make it successful and leave my footprints behind in that place.
So you go with the Maslow hierarchy of needs model that, first you have to have your finance, your basic needs met, and then your self-esteem and all the way up, and you have to progress through these.
Yeah.
Because there's like, if you look at J.K. Rowling, she couldn't feed herself. She couldn't even feed her own daughter, and she wrote her math. She became self-actualized when she was homeless. And you saw Mother Teresa self-actualized, completely broke, didn't know where her next meal was coming from. There's a lot of examples where people, Beethoven self-actualized, died penniless, right? That you don't need to pass through those steps. I don't know. Like a lot of people, I think, like the caller was waiting for certain steps to be in place, where I think people who are really successful, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, he didn't wait till he had a gym membership. He was literally hanging from the rafters, doing pull-ups. He would he would lift rocks, do whatever you can with what you have. I don't know. I'm not a big believer in this hierarchy.
Well, those examples that you gave, Shane, there are few examples, whereas there are probably zillions of examples of doing that steady, stable, planned growth approach and going a step by step. And the probability of success is much higher in a step up approach rather than just doing it in a haphazard. Unrealistic vision manner.
Right. So you're better off basing it on the statistical probable than the outlier of the wild card who wrote a book on the back of a napkin in a cafe.
Yeah, you have to be realistic about it, Shane. One's got to be very realistic about it.
So we are listening to Dev Mehta, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties, his insights and lessons learned on the road to the top. Coming up, we're going to find out what he looks for when he's hiring. So stay with us.
Dubai i103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are speaking to Dev Mehta, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties. Dev, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I think a lot of good advice. I think the big theme is, have the drive, have the fire, but don't try to rush things. Build a very even step-by-step, build your career up. And really, you spend an hour in the morning and you spend some more time in the evening focusing on your vision and where you go and planning your day and how you're going to use your time. And I think that that's also really, really critical. But I think what a lot of people want to know is, what do you look for when you're hiring?
Attitude. I hire people for talent. I'm not a very big fan of hiring only experienced people. I rather give young motivated people with the right kind of an attitude to groom them.
They're cheaper as well. than bringing in. But sometimes you bring in someone who's like really they have a lot of skill at a really high price, but they have the wrong attitude.
Some people, they have a lot of skill sets, but it's a wrong attitude that they can never achieve the desired goals, and they're never team players. They are very individually driven. They don't have a overall management goal. They can never gel with the team, and then the organization goal gets completely diluted if such a player is there on board.
Right. And, one of the things where, people say, hey, if I've gone across industries or I've gone to 3-4 different industries, it's not a big deal. But, one of the things you were talking about there was focus and being focused and goal oriented. When I see someone who's going across 3-4 industries, I think, hey, they're not focused. They don't have a vision. They don't have a sense of direction. They're not goal oriented. They're just being opportunistic. And I don't know. How do you interpret that kind of jumpy CV?
To begin with, in the early part of your career, one can have multiple vision because you're still progressing in your career and you're trying to find the right path. But towards the mid stages of your career, one needs to find a specialty because as a specialist in an industry that can go on to succeed in long run, because then you need the relevant experience which takes you forward in the later stages of your career.
So what I say, it's kind of like musical chairs. Like either, you have that vision and you go for it from a young age, and I see some people like that, and other people they don't know, but guess what? If you're 35, 36, 38, getting up to 40, whatever industry you're in, it's a done deal. Just focus on moving up, and that would be my suggestion. I don't know if you would suggest the same thing.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Jen.
Yeah. So attitude number one, you want someone who's a team player, goal oriented. When you look at goal orientation though, I go back in high school and you realize, you look at someone like, what university did you want to go to? You have people who are like, I wanted to go to this particular school, and they set a path around it and they had a lot of structure, key milestones, things they needed to do to get there, what kind of infrastructure you're building around a goal. And the underperformer, you know, you can see they just have this nebulous thing on the horizon that they organically strive for every day. So how do you assess that in someone, the goal orientation? Is it the infrastructure piece that you're looking for, or is it just simply a treasure trove of accolades?
No, it's infrastructure, very, very much infrastructure driven, because the goal has to be visualized very, very early in your career. And as you move along, one becomes specialist in the industry, because it's a specialist in the long run that will sustain you, and people will look up to you and seek advice. But having said that, in the early part of the career, you can have multiple goals, multiple visions, some people do not have mentorship, and some people do not get the right kind of guidance in the early part of the career. So that's why they fling around between the various streams.
Right, right. So, but you know, the other thing is, I think that people don't look at is, you know, if you're not being able to set and achieve goals for yourself in a structured way, and you're not able to give direction to yourself in a professional way, you're not able to have a vision for your own career. How are you going to give that to 500 people or 1,000 people? Yeah. And then you say, oh, I want a leadership role, I want a management role, and you're not managing yourself effectively.
Absolutely. You have to set, you have to lead by example. You have to, one needs to have that in oneself, that you are managing yourself and the team. Then only such a person can be promoted further to any leadership position.
And do you feel as a leader yourself, you know, those times, you know, and things sway, right? So there'll be certain quarters or certain parts of the year where you as an individual are more focused and you are, you're more clear on what your goals are that day, that week, that month, that quarter. Your team feeds off that, right? They can pick up on it, whether you want to admit it or not. Do you feel that as well? Is that as you become less focused, that slack goes through the team?
Oh, yes, undoubtedly. There are times when I'm slacking too, I have to admit, and but there are the moments that I'm very, very focused and I'm leading, the team is very geared up, because they're always looking up to me, or as such any leader who is leading the organization, they look up to you. So every move of yours, every little body language they notice. And you have to inspire them every moment, and they feed off you.
You have to live your values.
Absolutely.
And you're constantly under scrutiny.
Yeah.
And so if you don't like criticism, you shouldn't be a CEO. Because it doesn't matter what you do, right? Like you go bring this best tropical fauna. There's going to be someone being like, oh, they don't have an avocado plant in here. This is not tropical, right? It doesn't matter what you do. Somebody's going to say something, right?
Yeah, you can't please everyone in this world. You must have conviction about what you are doing. And once you have the conviction, you just follow that path. Yeah.
You have to have a tough skin, right? Because you're going to wake up in the paper sometimes. You know, I have a few friends who are very prominent, and no matter what they do, they're getting it. You know, they're getting some mud thrown at them.
Oh, I have my critics too.
So what's your advice to anyone out there who wants to become more successful?
I relate a poem which stuck onto my life till date, and I think it will be till the last day of my life. It's by Robert Frost, that woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. Don't just give up on your dreams. Dream and chase them every morning.
I was a little nervous when a man starts reading poetry to me, but, you know, that wasn't that bad. That was actually pretty good. So basically, just never give up, and that it's a long journey.
Yes.
Settle in. That you really, you know, I find the most interesting is the private equity guys, because MBAs, for whatever reason, they get their MBA and they want to do two things. They want to go into private equity or become a strategy consultant. And they don't know what either one does, but that's what they want to do, right? So, you know, if you don't like crunching numbers and evaluating companies and going through balance sheets, you know, you're probably not going to enjoy private equity, because you're going to do that for like 7 or 8 years before you get a real paycheck, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a slow burn, you know. I can't imagine a business where you have to wait 5 years before you get like your you know, your pat on the back. Like, hey, that was a good job. That thing you started 5 years ago, they'll be like, you know, thanks, right? But, you know, but if you are good at it, you know, they make a hell of a lot of money. But it takes time, right? And I think that's what I got out of that poem, is that these are long woods. This is going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of cold, dark nights. And to some way, success is not about big wins. It's about pushing through those dark moments day in, day out, when you just feel like giving up.
Yeah, the hunger to success is that fire in the belly. I always use this term, the fire in the belly. You should have it. As long as it's burning, desire to be there, you will get there. And you have it in you. You will always feel it inside you, that burning desire.
Right. I like to say, you know, when the light's gone, when you're surrounded by darkness, it's your fire in the belly that lights your way.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to see from Indigo moving forward. What about after your Zen project is done? What's next? Are you going to be following Elon Musk to Mars, or it'll be something closer to home?
Something to do with hospitality.
Yeah, you're going to get into the hotel business in Dubai. Now, you are really brazen. You know, this has got to be the craziest town to have a hotel in.
Well, the numbers are phenomenal. There are 18 million tourists which have come into Dubai every year, and those are astronomical numbers. And mind you, the hotels, they are the highest occupancy in anywhere in the world, perhaps. It's 80% occupancy.
You know why? It's the only city in the world where the people who live here will actually go and stay the weekend in the hotel. If you're in the elevator in the hotel in Dubai, you know, I've done it. We've all done it. You take a weekend vacation, but you just go stay in it, because the hotels are amazing here, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, where are you from? I'm from Dubai. I live in Dubai. Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, we're just here for the weekend, you know? Yeah. And you get some great weekend deals. Okay, so you think there's a lot of, it's a robust opportunity here in hotel. That's good. Because that's good. That means the economy is going to do well. I want to thank you so much, Dev, for coming out and sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you for inviting, and it's been a pleasure having speaking here and talking to you.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, so I'll have to have you on again sometime. And we wish you all the best with your tropical project.
Thank you very, very much.
That's Dev Mitra, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties. His new project, or his current project, is Indigo Zen Tropical Paradise in Dubai. That's it for this episode of Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, hoping the rest of your life is the best of your life.